We're beginning Vayn Yaakov, new semester. We're up to page 30 in the standard editions. We're holding about seven lines from the top. The first word on the line is B'Shabbos. Our subject was the famous Mishnah, which we read every Shabbos. Al shalosh avirot nashim metot b'shat le'edatan. There are three transgressions for which women will pass during the time of childbirth. We discussed the idea of childbirth being a time of danger. We discussed that things have changed. We discussed the statistics that even today, in different countries, it's still a dangerous thing to give birth. We discussed the different statistics depending on what country you're giving birth in. And we discussed the idea that men also will pass for their transgressions. That's also a reason why men will pass away. The Mishnah happens to discuss women because it's discussing the Mishnah of women, the Mishnah of candle lighting. That's the mitzvah that women do on Friday afternoon. So now we're continuing. We'll go one line down. I'm sorry, Tanya. That's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the top. Tanya. Rabbi Ishmael ben Elazar omer bavon shnei dvarim amei haaretz mitim. Rabbi Ishmael ben Elazar says there are two transgressions that are the prime cause for the common folk, the people who are not learned, but they're productive individuals. The word am haaretz, even though it has negative connotations, because it means one who is not learned, but in fact it is a compliment. It means one who is being productive. He's inhabiting the land. Al shekorin aron hakodesh arna. Number one is they look at the holy ark where the Torah is placed, and they call it the closet. So they're deriding it. It's as though it has no importance. So they come into shul and they call the Aron HaKodesh the closet. They're treating it like any other closet. So that's one sin. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar was coming to stress. Van shekorin bet haKnesset betam, and because they call the shul, the synagogue, they refer to it as the social hall, where everyone gathers. So again, they're taking away the holiness of the Jewish people, where we unite in the shul, and our purpose is not to have a social gathering, even though that's a nice byproduct. Our purpose is to serve our Creator, to pray, to hear Torah. And so these are two things that Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar says, these are two things that are held against the common folk. So what Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar is telling us is something very deep. We would think maybe what's held against them is that they don't learn Torah. Maybe what's held against them are other transgressions. So Nachmanides writes in his famous letter to his son, he writes to his son, you should always look at people positively. And if someone, you see someone who isn't as observant as you are, so you have to either value him because he knows more than you, or if he knows less than you, then you should remember that when he transgresses, he's making a mistake. It's not his fault. When you transgress, you know more than him, so it is your fault. So very often we think if a person is less learned, so then we tend to look down at them. And Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar says, no, what they're really held accountable for is their attitude, their approach. If you look at the ark that holds the Torah and you say that's a closet, and you look at the synagogue and you say that's a social hall, so then you're never going to grow. And that attitude can hold the person back. These two points, we all rush up when we open the Aron HaKodesh, we kiss the Sefer Torah, we accompany the Sefer Torah to the Ark. Why do we do that? Why do we have bells? Why do we adorn the Sefer Torah? So one of the issues is we want the children to have an appreciation for Torah. The way we speak about the Torah is going to teach the kids. So we auction off who's going to have the merit of taking out the Sefer Torah. The way we treat the Sefer Torah gives over to the next generation the appreciation that this is something that we cherish. When you talk about it as a closet and you talk about it as a social hall, so then there are alternatives in a person's own mind, and that's the education he's giving his own kids as well. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Elazar says this is what's held against them. And very often we overlook our attitudes. A person says, I went to shul, but he forgets that when he got up, he krechts and said, I wish I didn't have to go. It's Saturday morning. I wish I could stay home and watch the cartoons or whatever. Sometimes what we pass on to our kids, often what we pass on to our kids, is our attitude, not only our actions. If a kid grows up and he always hears his parents complaining about keeping Shabbos, at some point he might say, well, then I'm not. So the parent would say, but he saw me giving up everything for keeping Shabbos. Right, but he also saw that you weren't happy about it. Chabad has a minhag when they take off their tefillin, they kiss it maybe 15 times. So it seems funny. The first time you see it, a guy's going, you know, it seems funny. But it has a meaning. When the kid sees that, he's getting a message. So, yes?
Is there a minhag to do it once?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, is that like widespread? Or?
Yeah. What?
No, I mean, do most people do that? Or?
Most people give a kiss as they put it away, sure. You take off your tefillin, you give them a kiss, and then you put them away. Yeah. Next price, a Tanya. We have another Tanai quote. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Shlosha bitken mita nivru b'isha. There are three sins, three transgressions, that when a woman enters a time of danger, so then she gets checked, so to speak. In heaven they ask, is she worth... Has she transgressed? Is she worthy of making it out of this alive? And others say that these three transgressions, they bring a person to pass away a little bit earlier than their set time. And that's it's just two approaches to the same idea. These three transgressions are the laws of family purity. So that's one of the most difficult mitzvahs we have. Family purity, you tell a couple part of the month they're not allowed to touch, they're not allowed to be intimate, so that's hard. Chala, so that's an issue of self-control. You just worked hard, you harvested the wheat, you ground it into flour, you kneaded it into dough, and now before you can bake it, you're supposed to give the coin. So today we don't give the coin, we take off a piece, we burn it. Is a person careful with that? And Hadlakat HaNer is something which is really, it's in our interest. We give light to the house. But very often we tell ourselves, what do I need to light another light for? People sometimes put on a Shabbos clock and they say, I'll make the lights go off at 10:30, I'll be done with the meal. Why should you do that? Maybe you'll want to sit around with your kids for another half hour. So again, our sages wanted us to have light in the house, to have a beautiful atmosphere that's enveloped in light. And these are three areas that are under the woman's charge. The man doesn't know... when the woman's onset began, when it ended, if she's doing, you know, when a woman, should we do a quick overview of the laws of family purity? You guys should have a picture of it, yeah? How does it work? So a woman has her onset. From that moment onward, the couple is prohibited from touching or anything else. Usually it takes a woman about 6 days till all the trickling and everything ends, somewhere between 5 and 7 days. The average is around 6. And then she takes a cloth, a clean cloth. She checks herself. And she sees that she's clean. And then every day for the next 7 days, she checks herself, let's say on the fifth or sixth day. If she sees she's clean, she checks herself towards nightfall. So then starting the next day, she'll start 7 clean days. And every day she'll check herself twice, preferably, to check that she's clean. Now, let's say she checks herself and there's a spot and she's not clean. She started bleeding again. She has to start all over again. The husband has no idea whether she checked herself and she was clean or not. You don't know. I mean, it's nice. We recommend that couples will look at each cloth together because very often she or he has a better eye and they'll catch things that the other one wouldn't. Sometimes there's just a drop of blood and a person might miss it. But very often you're out at work, you have no idea. She's doing her checks. You don't know if she's being careful or not, if she even did the checks or not. So these are woman's mitzvah. She's baking bread. Do you know if she took off the portion of challah, she made the blessing and took it off or not? You don't know. You're at work, you have no idea what she's doing in the house. And lighting candles, so that the man has a responsibility to make sure the lights are on the way they should be for Shabbos. Okay, Chandak Rabbi Eliezer and Chandak Rabbanan. These two different quotes are in line with what we saw last semester from Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbanan. We'll move on. Amar B'Yitzchak, we're up to the big letter, Chaf Gimel, towards the bottom of the page. Amar B'Yitzchak, great Rav Yehuda. Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi Yehuda, said the following: Levakesh leolam yevakesh adam rachamim shelo yechla. A person should always pray he should not fall ill. Very often we walk into shul and it's basically we're paying our dues. We walk in and we're ready to walk out. We ask ourselves, am I going to have the good fortune of having a quick chazan so I'll be able to be out in time today? And if not, maybe I'll leave a few minutes early. And our prayer is half lip service. Why? Because we're not too concerned about anything. Take a person whose relative is ill. Take a person, I have a friend who the doctors took an x-ray of his stomach and they saw something the size of a pea that wasn't moving on, that stayed stuck in his stomach, and they thought it was a tumor. So they told him, we're going to have to operate and go in there and see what it is. And you could imagine his prayer was different until they operated and found it was a pea that got stuck in his stomach. Don't ask me how that happens. So every year when that day comes, he celebrates. You know, he thought he was dying and now he's alive. When we have what to be worried about, so then our prayers are different. Says Rav Yitzchak B'Rei Rav Yehuda, a person should always pray he shouldn't fall ill. Because when a person falls ill, in heaven his soul is taken to task, and they ask her, you have merits? You have anything to say for yourself? You have to prove yourself fit. Just like we said, when a woman's giving birth, she needs merits in order to make it out alive. Well, a man is no different. I lost already at least one, probably more than that, friend to the flu. We have the flu, we think that's it. You get the flu, you move on, right? A few days and you're back to your feet sometimes. But every year people die from the common flu. Yes, a lot of people die from the common flu every year. We don't think about it. Rabbi Yitzchak B'Rei Rav Yehuda says, we should pray we shouldn't fall ill, because when a person falls ill, then he has to prove himself to make it out alive. Amar Marukva Me'ekra, what verse supports this idea? Ki yipol hanofel mimenu, mimenu lavi ra'aya. This verse indicates that it's, so to speak, the burden of proof is on you. Once a person falls ill, he's got to prove himself fit for getting better. So pray that you don't fall that way. The same is true with the police. You should pray you shouldn't end up in court. Because if you end up in court, you never know who's going to win. You assume you'll win. You hope you'll win. You never know. Things sometimes end up differently than expected. Tanya deber b'Yishmael. We moved on to the next page, page Tetz Zayin. The verse describes a person who's climbing, a person who's on a roof. The Torah tells us we have a mitzvah to put a banister on our roof so people wouldn't fall off it. So that's a mitzvah that applies not only to our rooftops, it applies to any source of danger we might have in the house. If you have a socket that's coming out, you got to fix it. Someone could get hurt by it. You have a dog that could bite people. You got to chain that dog. This applies to any source of harm that one might have in one's home. It says you shouldn't leave around. You shouldn't leave a ladder that's not stable, because someone's going to climb that ladder and they won't know it's not stable. In my house, sometimes we put floor cleaner in soda bottles. You empty out, you finish a soda bottle. So sometimes you want to use floor cleaner. You want to use a small amount, or you want to dilute it. So we put it in a soda bottle. Now imagine we wouldn't label that soda bottle. So unfortunately, sodas and floor cleaner, you can't always discern. The smell is not so far from one another. The color, what?
Smells like lemon.
Yeah, you could have a lemon-flavored floor cleaner. So we have a rule. You don't use a soap bottle unless you cut off the label and you label it. You write on it that it's something else. If you cut off the label and there's something else written on it, then you could put in floor cleaner. That's this idea. You don't leave anything that would be a source of harm in your home. So when the verse describes, don't leave a rooftop without a banister, the Torah says, be careful to put a banister, ki yipol hanofel mimenu, so that you ensure that someone doesn't fall from it. So the Talmud asks, the Talmud says, ra'u ze lipon mishesh yemei breshit, when the verse describes it, the verse says, lest the one who falls fall from your rooftop. So that's a funny way to word it. What does it mean, lest the one who falls fall from your rooftop? So the Talmud says, from the 6 days of creation, it's already been planned that this person is going to fall. You see, the Torah describes it as the person who falls. What the Torah is telling you is, he was going to fall anyways. The question is, was he going to fall from your rooftop? He could have fallen from someone else's rooftop. In heaven, it was decided he would fall. Now, this is a very scary concept. This leads us to a broader topic of free will. This is a broad topic throughout the Shas. When I reach my hand into my pocket and I pull out the wrong coin, was that ordained by heaven? So one opinion in Talmud is that yes, that's a punishment from heaven. It's a small punishment for a small crime. You'll take that. Okay. It says that when Joseph was taken down to be sold as a slave in Egypt, so he was taken down and he was going to be a prostitute. They were taking him down with the intention, not for women, for men. He was a good-looking young man. In Egypt, they were into this. And he was being taken down naked. It says the wagon that took him down was carrying spices and perfume. So our sages say that was a gift from heaven. So imagine this 17-year-old boy is being taken down naked for a torturous life, and he has spices and perfume. Does that really matter to him? So here we see a few concepts. One concept we see is that every iota, every little ounce of pain or suffering that a person undergoes, there's a reason for it. And if he wasn't supposed to suffer what he would have ordinarily suffered, which is that Arabs ordinarily in those days, they were into the trade of hides. So the Arab wagons, the Arab caravans always stink because they were always taking hides. And he didn't deserve that. He didn't deserve to spend the trip smelling the hides. So the Torah specifically says they were carrying nechot tzarivalot. They were carrying spices to tell us that he didn't deserve, that he didn't get. Everything else he did deserve, everything else he got. Coming back to here. So firstly, our sages are telling us that if, according to this opinion in Talmud, if a person trips and falls off a roof, he deserved that. Now that, people can take this out of hand. I was walking home back when we lived in this neighborhood, and we rounded a corner, and one of the guys of the Machon, we were walking together, and as we rounded the corner, he bumped into a pole. So, I took the outer side of the turn, he took the inner side of the turn, there was a pole there, his belt got caught on a pole, and he got knocked over a drop. So, he straightens himself out, and looks towards heaven and starts wagging his finger and saying, "Why did you do that to me?" So at first I thought he was joking. Then I realized he's serious. So you understand that people can take this Gemara out of hand, right? There's a normal way to live life, and we have to find that that golden path. But there's another concept the Gemara just told us. The Gemara says, "Megalgelin zchut al yedei zakai v'chovah al yedei chayav." Hashem causes good things to happen in this world through good people, and bad things happen through bad people. And so sometimes we tell ourselves, "It's not my fault." And what the Talmud's saying is, it might not be your fault, but you have to wonder: are you a source of blessing to the world or otherwise? And a person has to realize that in heaven, they allow meritorious people to be the source of meritorious deeds. And a person wants to be a source of blessing to the world if they live up to their responsibility in life, so then in heaven they facilitate that. The Talmud is saying that when the man fell off the roof, he was supposed to fall off a roof. He didn't have to fall off your roof. But if a person was careful in the rest of his life, so then in heaven they ensure he doesn't fall off of his roof. But if he did, so then that indicates something to a person. Now this is a scary concept. Sometimes a person takes comfort in saying it's not my fault. And here the Talmud's saying that's true, but it's still an indicator. You're not held accountable, but you do have to take a step back and say, why did it have to happen through me? We have a concept that has many applications. It says that if a woman had intimate relations with an animal, so you kill the woman and you kill the animal. So the question is, why? What did the animal do wrong? Same with the man. I'm saying, so the idea is this animal was the cause of the death of a human, but the animal didn't do it. And from here we derive another idea. When the courts have to execute someone, so then the halacha says that the knife that was used to kill him or the rope he was hung by, they all get buried. We don't leave anything. They were used to take a human life, so they get buried. But it's not their fault. Right, but they were still the source of death in the world, and they get buried with the person. We don't leave them around. So
we don't do that.
We don't do the death penalty today. No. We haven't been doing death penalty for over two millennia.
But if an object caused someone's death, you don't bury
that. That's an interesting question. Where do you encounter this? You're saying the surgeon's tools when the guy bleeds to death?
Bullet.
You retrieve the bullet. I'm saying, where is it relevant?
Not the gun.
You need the gun.
You're saying if a gun killed someone by mistake, that would be a question. If it killed a terrorist, so then you have to kiss that gun and save someone's life. I'm saying that's kli mitzvah, right? Why are you guys laughing? I'm serious. If someone wanted to kill you and you were able to save your life with that gun, so that's you're saying, I don't know, I've never heard of that application, but I guess it makes sense. I hear. I don't think that's so, though. I don't think that's so. You see, you need a special mitzvah in the Torah that an ox that gored gets the death penalty. So it doesn't seem to be a universal rule. I'm saying, obviously, if an animal killed, then that's a different reason. We're scared the animal will cause harm. I don't know. I don't have a source that proves one way or another. Where it would be relevant is if a surgeon has tools and people die on the operating table. Saying, so then, yeah. But at the end of the day, the tools can cause their death. Would he have to bury those tools? And I don't think he does. Okay, what a morbid topic. Okay. Okay, we'll continue with some more. You want to continue? Yeah. We're on a roll. Good morbid topics. Tanu Rabbanan. We have another Tanai quote. Tanu Rabbanan means this Tanai quote was validated, was verified by the Academy of Rav Chiya or Rav Oshaya. Mishe chalav natalamut. We're on page Tet Zayin, the fourth line. If someone became ill and now they were leaning towards death. Omrim lo yitvade. So we tell him, confess. Now, what does that mean, confess? It's not we're bringing in a priest and saying, son, what do you have to say? Hitvadeh is talk to your creator and say, I regret what I did wrong in my life. Sheken kol ha-mumatim nitvadin, because any person that would get the death penalty, even in the court, so that's a pretty wicked person, he willfully sinned, he was forewarned. A second earlier, he was told, if you do this, you'll get the death penalty. There were witnesses, and he did it nonetheless. So nonetheless, when he gets the death penalty, we encourage him to say, to repent, to do tshuva, to confess before his creator. He doesn't talk to the rabbi, right? Now, there is a detailed vidui, which is printed in these big fat sidurim that have everything in them. But technically, a person can just say, I regret what I've done wrong, and may my death be an atonement for what I've done wrong. A friend of mine was ill a year ago. Less than a year ago, Pesach, half a year ago. And he had leukemia. I called his sons and I said, what's the prognosis? How much time does he have? And they didn't answer me. And I kept chasing after them. And I kept asking myself this Gemara. You know, if I'm his rabbi, I should tell him this Gemara. You know, you should do tshuva. So why didn't I? Because the halacha also says that when a person is ill, you have to ensure that they maintain a good spirit. And if by you telling him, you know, buddy, why don't you give your last will and testament? So you're telling him, you're a goner. And then you destroy his spirit. And as the verse says in Proverbs, in Mishlei, Ruach ish yichalkel machaleu. The spirit of a man supports his illness. When he feels all depressed, so then he can get deathly ill. When he feels optimistic, so that gives him the strength to combat his illness. So even though this halacha says that you encourage a person to do tshuva, including confess what he's done wrong before his creator, you have to do it very smartly to do it without destroying his spirit. So I kept asking his sons, tell me what the prognosis is. How much do we know, how much time the doctors think he has left? By the time they realized he wasn't going to live another week, he wasn't there anymore. There was no one to talk to. And even then, I didn't tell him this, because even then, I couldn't tell how much he was grasping and not. So the halacha says an interesting thing here. Adam yotze lashuk. We're up to the fifth line. If a person goes out into the marketplace, now the marketplace is, Ben Yehuda is a small thing compared to their market. Their market, who told me here? One of the rabbis here told me that in the Far East, they have a celebration that lasts 2 weeks and 20 million people come. Can you imagine being with 20 million people? When we go to Uman, we get excited, yeah? How many people do we have in Uman? I don't know. I don't know how many thousands of people are there. It's very exciting to be in a shul with 1,000 people. I merited to be with 600,000 people here when they had that protest a half a year ago. As far as you can see, there were people. So we prayed together. But in their days, that was market day. Market day meant you went to a place where you had over 500,000 people. That was their market. So when you go out to market, you never know who you're going to rub the wrong way, who you're going to bump into. And there are all kinds of people who are looking. You know, today you have people who ride the buses. All they're doing is trying to connect with the Wi-Fi to steal your information. There are people who ride the buses today with one intention in mind, to steal your information, to hack your computer. That's what they're doing. So in those days, they also had fellows like this. People would walk the marketplace, bumping into you, and then you bumped into me, and I bumped into you, and suddenly he's suing you, and they'd find ways to start fights and try to make money that way. So you're going out into the market, you're going out where there are a lot of people around, dishonest people around. So a person has to think as though, I'm going before the judge. You're not before the judge, right, but you're entering a place where people try to sue one another, and they do try to make you fall. Think of yourself as already standing before the court. When a person suddenly feels a headache and he feels like maybe I should lie down, I'm not feeling so great, he should feel as though they're putting him in chains and he's being brought before a panel. He's on death row. If he's ill to the point where he's already sick in bed, so he should view it as though he's being taken up already to the gallows. Lidon, they're going to judge him there. Once he's up there, he better have a really good attorney in order to make it out alive. So who's your attorney when a person's ill? Tshuva u'masim tovim. A person's good deeds, a person's tshuva, those are his best defense attorneys. V'afilu 999 melamdim alav chova. Even if 999 times a person sinned, a person transgressed in this area, 999 times he was about to say Lashon Hara, and he did. V'echad melamed alav zchut. But one time he was able to say, no, I won't. Nitzol, so then he can escape. The verse says, if you have even one time where you stood up and you did what was right, so then an angel walks in and says, have mercy on him, save him, don't let him go down. So this idea is also quoted in the laws of Avidui. We said when a person goes ill, you tell him, hey, you should really do tshuva. And you also tell him, guess what? Pious people do tshuva anytime they're going into the market. Remember, how did the Gemara begin? You go out into the market, so you should view it as though you're already standing before the judge, because you don't know how you'll end up with market day, how many people you're going to get into fights with. So what we tell a person is, you should know, I'm not telling you this because I think you're going to die. I'm telling you this because it's an amulet for getting better. People who want to get better, so they do tshuva. By doing tshuva, you have angels who speak on your behalf. You have a better chance of getting out okay. Now, you have to have a person in a certain state of mind in order to do this. It says, get the women out of the room. Because if you're going to start talking to them about this, and the women are there, they're going to burst out crying. It's going to change the whole atmosphere, and that's it. Go try telling them encouraging words as there's sobbing noises in the background. Doesn't work. So this takes a lot of thought and skill. And I'm telling you, a half a year ago, I was standing where I had to do this, and I couldn't find the right scenario to do it. I kept trying to find a way to lead the conversation in that direction, and what I repeatedly saw was that what he needed to hear was, you're going to make it out alive, you're going to be okay. And that's what he needed to hear. He wasn't holding where he could hear this. And I'm just saying, this is a tough halacha. You got to really think it through. And when in doubt, you have to be very careful, because breaking his spirit could be killing him. You know, if he doesn't have the strength to fight, so very often that defines how he'll deal with the illness. Someone I know was contemplating an operation, and it was a very rare operation he had to undergo. So there's this huge hospital in Texas, I think, MD Anderson. You guys heard of this? This is a huge hospital, MD Anderson. And in that hospital, they did this hospital two or three times. They did this operation two or three times a week. And in the hospital where he was going to have the operation done, they did it once every 2 months. So you'd think that the surgeons in MD Anderson are much better because they do it twice a week. You know, they have much more experience. All the doctors agreed that if he could stay in his home turf, where he'll be in touch with his family, he won't be in a foreign state, you know, where he has no one in a hospital room. He'll be able to go back home and recuperate at home. His spirit will be stronger, and his odds of surviving are better. It was more important in the eyes of the doctors, and we consulted numerous doctors. They all agreed. Keeping his spirit up was a greater factor in his surviving than the skill of the doctors in the operation. So that's the idea we were just discussing here in this halacha. That although we do encourage a person to do tshuva, but his spirit is at least as important and probably more important than this halacha. Okay, we're going to pause.